复习一下耶稣基督降生的故事，降生的故事，然后安稳再来传道讲解。好，好，我们今天读马太福音第一章十八节。We'll be reading Matthew 1, chapter 1, Matthew, verse 18. 耶稣基督降生的事记在下面。他母亲玛利亚已经许配了约瑟，还没有迎娶，玛利亚就从圣灵怀了孕。她丈夫约瑟是个义人，不愿意明明的羞辱她，想要暗暗地把他休了。正思念这事的时候，有主的使者向他梦中显现，说：大卫的子孙约瑟，不要怕，只要娶过你的妻子玛利亚来，因她所怀的孕是从圣灵来的，她将要生一个儿子，你要给他起名叫耶稣，因他要将自己的百姓从罪恶里救出来。这一切的事成就，就是是要应验主凭先知所说的话，必有童女怀孕生子，人要称他的名为以马内利。约瑟醒了起来，就遵着主使者的吩咐把妻子娶过来，只是没有和他同房，等他生了儿子，就给他起名叫耶稣。 Chapter 2 Matthew 2。当希律王的时候，耶稣生在犹太的伯利恒。有几个博士从东方来到耶路撒冷，说：那生下来做犹太人之王的在哪里？我们在东方看见他的星，特来拜他。希律王听见了，就心里不安，耶路撒冷合成的人也都不安。他就召集了祭司长和民间的文士，问他们说：基督当生在何处？他们回答说：在犹太的伯利恒，因为有先知记着说：犹大地的伯利恒啊，你在犹大诸城中并不是最小的，因为将来有一位君王要从你那里出来，牧养我以色列民。当下希律暗暗地招了博士，细问那星是什么时候出现的，就差他们往伯利恒去，说：你们去仔细寻访那小孩子，寻到了就来报信，我也好去拜他。他们听见王的话就去了，在东方所看见的那是忽然在他们前头行，直到小孩的地方就在上头停住了。他们看见那星就大大的欢喜，进了房子，看见小孩子和他母亲玛利亚，就俯伏拜那小孩子，揭开宝盒，拿黄金、乳香、没药为礼物献给他。博士因为在梦中被主指示不要回去见希律，就从别的路回本地去了。他们去后，有主的使者向约瑟梦中显现，说：起来，带着小孩子同他母亲逃往埃及，住在那里，等我吩咐你，因为希律必寻找小孩子，要除灭他。约瑟就起来，夜间带着小孩子和他母亲往埃及去，住在那里，直到希律死了。这是要应验主借先知所说的话：我从埃及召出我的儿子来。希律见自己被博士愚弄，就大大发怒，差人将伯利恒城里并市境所有的男孩，照着他向博士仔细询问的时候，凡两岁以内的都杀尽了。这就应了先知耶利米的话，说：在拉玛听见号啕大哭的声音，是拉结哭他儿女不肯受安慰，因为他们都不在了。Next, we'll be reading Luke chapter 2. 当那些日子，凯撒奥古斯都有旨意下来，叫天下人 叫天下人民都报名上册。这是居里纽驻叙利亚巡抚的时候头一次行报名上册的事，众人各归各城报名上册。约瑟也从加利利的拿撒勒城上犹太去，到了大卫的城，名叫伯利恒，因他本是大卫一族一家的人，要和他所聘之妻玛利亚一同报名上册。那时玛利亚的身孕已经重了，他们在那里的时候，玛利亚的产期到了，就生了头胎的儿子，用布包起来放在马槽里，因为客店没有地方。在伯利恒之野地里有牧羊的人，夜间按着更次看守羊群，有主的使者站在他们旁边，主的荣光四面照着他们，牧羊的人就甚惧怕。那天使对他们说，不要惧怕，我报给你们大喜的信息是关乎万民的，因今天在大卫的城里为你们生了救主，就是主基督。你们要看见一个婴孩包着布卧在马槽里，那就是记号了。忽然有一大队天兵同那天使赞美神说，在至高之处荣耀归于神，在地上平安归于他所喜悦的人。众天使离开他们升天去了。众天使离开他们升天去了，牧羊的人彼此说，我们往伯利恒去看看所成的事，就是主所指示我们的。他们急忙去了，就寻见玛利亚和约瑟，又有那婴孩卧在马槽里。既然看见，就把天使论这孩子的话传开了，凡听见的就诧异牧羊人对他们所说的话。玛利亚却把这一切的事存在心里，反复思想。牧羊的人回去了，因所听见所看见的事正如天使向他们所说的，就归荣耀于神，赞美他。
Everyone knows this story, yes? We've seen multiple elementary school plays, correct? We've seen all types of versions. We've seen little nativity scenes people have in the front lawn. We have them in our home. So we know the story. And I think with the challenge of knowing the story, we stop learning from the story. We stop learning from the narrative. I think with a narrative, and what I also teach the students is, you're not just hearing a narrative, you're not just hearing a historical story, but we're to learn from these things. And so I want to approach this story, the birth of Christ, as a parable. What is the difference in the way we receive a parable and in the way we receive a story about history? A parable, we're trying to learn from a parable, correct? We put ourselves in a situation in a parable. The parable of the prodigal son. Everyone thinks, I am either this son or that son, correct? Or you affix somebody. You affix a role to somebody. You're that son. You're the older son. You're the father. And so I wanted to treat this narrative as a parable. But here's the thing with parables, whenever Jesus lays out a parable, do we decide who we are in the parable? Christ decides, correct? You are this person in the parable. Whether you like it or not, you are this person. And oftentimes people don't like it when they're affixed with a particular role in this parable. So there are four types that I wanted to focus on in this parable. And the first is Herod. And look at those qualities. Those are all qualities I want my child to have. I want my child to be rich, educated. I know we're not aristocrats, but maybe, hey, who knows? Maybe they'll marry an aristocrat. I want them to have all of his qualities, power, status. These are his qualities, correct? Now, we hear the story and we only think to ourselves, baby killer. But you see, with sin, it never starts that way with somebody. Herod was once a child. He was once a young man. And he had people around him. Whenever we read in the paper, someone blowing up a building, someone coming in and shooting up people, they weren't born this way. They were raised a certain way. And it is the accumulation of our life that defines us. And don't you want all these things for your children? Minus the baby killing part? Don't you want these things? We work our whole lives. I work my whole life that my children would have these qualities. Here is the difference. And I tell this to your children, I tell this to mine. These are good things, yes. Are these the things that will fulfill you? No. Are these the things that will save you? No. Are they bad things? They're not bad things in themselves. If they are the only thing, they are the worst thing. Do you understand? If these are the only things, and we send, you have to understand, you send messages to your kids. I send messages to my children without actually saying it. Come on. We all know a B is an Asian fail. Correct? Bees. We don't want our children to have Bs. I don't want my children to have Bs either. And I lecture them. You're never going to get into a good college. You're never going to get a good job. You're never going to have a nice house. I mean, this is the message. And those things are true. But I must remind myself these things do not save them. Because in the end, when we must face Christ, all that they've worked for their whole life, it will be like a vapor. It will be ash. You cannot take any of these things with you. But these are the things that define Herod. And they come between us like a veil and keeps us from seeing who Christ is. Now, here's the thing with Herod. Did he believe in the Messiah? Did he believe there would be a king that is born? Yes, correct? He believed it so much, he was willing to kill for it. That's faith. If he was not a man of faith, he would have said, oh, great, you followed a star, wise men, fine, the king's going to be born, yada, 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 I'm going to go about my day. That's a man that would not believe. But he believed, correct? So is believing that Christ exists enough? It is not enough. And I tell that to the youth all the time. Just because you believe God exists, it is not enough. I believe Obama exists, President Obama. Have I ever met him? Do I have a personal relationship? No, I do not. Will he ever invite me for dinner? Most likely not. Will I be in his will? No. But I believe he exists. I've never even seen him in person. But I am certain about his existence. You can be as certain as anyone to believe that Christ exists. It is not enough. Intimacy with him. It is essential to our life here on earth and the life to come. To be intimate, to know someone, to have faced them, to have spoken to them. He has all these qualities. Herod, wealthy, educated, aristocratic, power, status. He believes in Jesus. Absolutely the Messiah is going to be born. Go ahead and kill all the babies. Because I am so certain he'll be born, I need to eliminate him. We all have plans. I have plans for my children. And I love Jesus. I love Jesus. But this is what I had come to realize. I love Jesus as long as he does not interfere with my plans. I love him, but Jesus, stay out of my business. I have plans for my children, for my family. But I love you, Jesus, but do not interfere with my plans. And this is the spirit of Herod. We come to the place as we get older, we are more and more inflexible. I can't tell you how inflexible I am. It is his inflexibility. Christ comes and interferes with Herod's plans, and he must be eliminated. Because we love Jesus, but as long as he's not interfering with our life. And this is a problem, because we cannot see him in this state. Now, here's the thing. Can you be rich? Can you be wealthy? Can you be powerful? And still love Jesus and see him? And the Magi give us some hope. So, the Magi. We're on the Magi. So, the Magi. Some translations say they're wise men. Some say they're kings. They're kings from the east. They offered gold, frankincense, myrrh. Whoever offered gold, he was not poor. So, and they were probably aristocrats themselves, because some of the translations do say they were kings. Can we have it all? So what makes them different from Herod? They can adjust their path. Because the star that they saw, like a comet, headed in a direction, and they came from such a far-off land, they needed to remove themselves from the life that they knew. They were deeply inconvenienced. So what is inside the Magi that makes them different? We've all gone through this. You work, yes? Most of you work. And we do the work that we were trained to do, that we went to school for. And we reached a certain status in our workplace. Have you ever had that place where you wondered, what am I contributing to this world? And yes, it's a naive thought. Most college students think this, and then we call them naive. 10 years into a job, 15 years into your job, have you ever evaluated what you've done? And you wonder if you bring value to this world. You seek the things to bring meaning to your own life, to bring meaning to the lives around you. This is a beautiful thing. The Magi, for years they could have ruled in their world, and yet they sought the things of meaning and a purpose. That there must be a way that this world can be saved. When you read the paper, don't you sometimes say what a horrible world this is? That we need to do something? That Christ, we need you in a deep way. Those are the things that save us. It is not their status. It is not their place in society. This is not their political place. It's the part of them that continuously wonder if this world could be saved, if this world could be better, if I can be in a world where I have meaning and the people around me, I can have meaning for them. This is what allows them to see the Lord. And here is the scary thing. Why didn't God choose a Pharisee, Sadducee, or an Israelite zealot? It is implied they weren't even Israel, from Israel. Why didn't, if he is to come into this world as the king of the Jews, why did he not choose a Pharisee or Sadducee? Because there, it's possible there wasn't a single person who sought meaning for their life. You come to church every Sunday. I did it. I was in ministry for 10 years. I wanted it to grow. I wanted a position in ministry. I loved it when people called me pastor. I loved it when they bought me dinners. I loved all those things. I loved coming up here and the bully pulpit. I'd come up here and everyone can listen to me. As if I knew better than all of them. And with each passing year, something in me died. I was no longer the person that simply wanted Christ, simply sought meaning. All I wanted was a position to stand up here and for people to believe I know more than them made me feel like more of a person. And I relied upon it. I needed it. I needed my position to make me feel more like a man. And something in me, year after year, died. It just slowly died, and I didn't even know it was dying. It happened in church. And there was nothing in me that could ever see God. You see? There was nothing in me left. And it wasn't 10 years later I left the ministry and I began to find who I was. And when I even met Pastor Paul, I believed it was from the Lord. It was by circumstance. I did not seek out Pastor Paul. And my first day with the youth group, I sat there and I felt the Lord wanted me to be here in this basement. And it was a cruddy table with a few cruddy chairs on my first day. And not a single child showed up. And I said, you know what, Lord, I'm here. And I had to find who I was. All the Lord wanted me to do was come. So I did. I didn't feel bad about it. I wasn't angry. I did what the Lord told me. And that part of me when I was young and I first met Christ, I would have done anything for Christ. And I was returned to that place. And the second Sunday, youth kids came and we had a Bible study. And this ministry has been one of the most fulfilling ministries of my life. In a basement. On a cruddy table with stains all over the carpet. And these kids. It's been one of the most fulfilling moments of my life. Because I simply was who God had intended me to be. Seeker of Christ. All this church stuff, these titles, all this control, this garbage, I put it aside. And I finally found who I was. And the Magi had to remove themselves from their place so that they can find who they were. To come from another land so far away and to find a star. I mean, to find a star, this is insane, yes? This is not rational thinking. Who tells you to just go head towards the star? They're mystical. They're spiritual. And all the things that I lost in ministry, I wasn't spiritual anymore. I was nothing but a man that headed an institution. I had to return to that mystical place. And I began to see the Lord again in my prayer. And I wanted Him. It was that hunger again. And these are the qualities the Magi had. And they were given that privilege to see the Lord. Now we move to Joseph. Joseph, he's a good boy. You know what I love about all your kids? They're all great kids. They really are. My first ministry with a youth group, they were terrible. In gangs, drug addicts, I mean, it was all bad. But your kids, they're great kids. Great kids. They do what I say. It's scary. It's scary. They're so good, I really wonder what's going on. Sometimes up there, they're that good. I tell them they're great kids. But all of a sudden, Joseph, great kid, never talks during Bible study, always goes to all the services. That's the kind of person Joseph is. God tells him to marry this girl. Oh my good, she's pregnant. Would you love that? Your son, if those of you have sons, marry a girl that's, I mean, this is like MTV's Teen Pregnancies. She's pregnant. How would you feel? Come on, I'm Asian and I got the shame gene in me. I would be deeply ashamed. Wouldn't you? How about your daughter getting pregnant in high school? I mean, come on. That's for the low class, correct? This is a moment. Joseph is still a good boy. He wants to walk away from the marriage. Let me just slip out of here. And he has a dream. A dream would not be enough for me. Dream would not be enough for me. I would still slip out. A dream would not be enough for me. So for him to take Mary, he has to defy what? Public humiliation. Shame. Everything against his culture and religion, correct? Do your children have the capacity to overcome the culture that we brought up in? The things that were expected of us? Your children are great, and they do what is expected. Do they have the force to go outside of the things that we expect for them? Joseph must marry this teenage girl who is pregnant. Would you believe it if this teenage girl said that I have not laid with anyone and I'm pregnant by the Spirit of God? That is crazy. It is not a rational thought. When you see a teen pregnant girl, what do you automatically think? She's a floozy. She goes around laying with other boys. And this is not what we want for our children. To be that or to be involved with that. Joseph overcomes what is conventional. He overcomes the culture that he has been brought up in. And he overcomes all his religious beliefs. These are the things that God demands of us, to step outside our comfort zone. And we finally go to the shepherds. Who gets a visit from the angels? I mean, we're not talking in a dream. Who gets the angelic visit? I mean, Joseph didn't even get, he got a visit in a dream. That's like sort of like a secondary level of visit. But when you get an angel visiting you in your waking state, you're pretty special, correct? Right? I mean, if you tell people, you're pretty insane. But you're pretty special, correct? So who are these people, and who must we become? The shepherds. I would have to say a shepherd is the equivalent of an... You know why people were shepherds and didn't do other things? Because they didn't have the intellectual capacity to do anything else. Do you need a college degree to be a shepherd? Most of them, do you believe that they knew how to read or write? So they're illiterate. I mean, come on, this is what you want your kids to be, correct? Don't you want? But these are the ones that saw the angels. Do you want your kids to see angels or not? Take them out of school. Come on, you want them to be school dropouts. This is how you see an angel. You know? Illiterate, low class, powerless. I know you're not going to drop your kids out of school hoping an angel will visit them. But I want to talk about what is the quality that they have that we must draw out in us. You must set aside everything you've learned for God to use you. All the things that you learned that make you a smart, intellectual person, these are not the things that God uses for us to go back to that childlike place where we loved Him. We loved Him once, right? Where it was real and it was emotional and we felt like a baby. Here's a scary thing. In this parable, who are we? Remember, we don't get to choose. We do not get to choose who we are in this parable. But who are we in this parable? Are we closer to Herod? Are we closer to the Magi? Are we closer to being Joseph? Are we closer to being the shepherds? Now, I can say definitively that none of us are in the shepherds category. But yet they were the ones who had a visitation. And not only from the angels, but the hosts. I mean, they saw something miraculous. And here is the other scary thing. What did the shepherds do afterwards? What were they told to do? They were told to go. They were told to see, to talk about, to disseminate this information about something wonderful that's happened. Now, let's say the shepherds, they saw the Lord. They saw the angels. Now they're telling people. Now tell me who would believe them. If a homeless person came, walked right through that door and said, "I have seen the Lord." And the Lord says, "This church must do this." How many of you are going to believe Him? So, if none of you are going to believe Him, then He goes out and He tells other homeless people. What, does He have a better chance with us believing Him? Or the homeless people? Other homeless people believing Him? The homeless, correct? So, here's the frightening thing. God intentionally sets it up so that we don't have the privilege of this information. He does it on purpose. He says, "I don't want the wise and the learned to know." God takes aggressive action so that we will not see the wonder. Why would God do this to us? Correct? Why? Why does He intentionally keep it from us? What? They don't even know how to read. How are they going to disseminate this information? What is the only way they can disseminate this information? By telling other people, correct? This oral tradition, this oral narrative, this oral encounter of, listen, this is what's happened. And there is this intentional barrier that God puts between the aristocracy and these shepherds, because He knew that no one that of status, of wealth, or of any kind of human intelligence, worldly intelligence, will believe the shepherds. And so be it, and good. Good. They don't deserve to hear about this. So I'm going to tell these shepherds, and I know that no one of any real status in this world will believe them. But yet the poor will. Other shepherds will. As if God created this filter on purpose. And that's what scares me. Because I am not a shepherd. I am more Herod than any of these characters. And I am afraid. I am afraid that all the things I have in my life blind me. Because here's the weird thing. About being, having things of the world. You're blind, even though your eyes are as clear as day. That's the frightening thing. I walk around every day, and I often wonder, am I blind? Am I blind? I'm a blind person that does not know they're blind. And I beg for mercy. I beg. I said, God, every part of me, everything that I know, to be successful in this world, give me the strength to set it aside so I could have this great privilege to see the Lord. Do you understand? This message was scary to me because I realized I was none of those people. that had the privilege to see the Lord. I was the only person that I could identify with was the one that tried to cast out the Lord. So this story was something I had pondered on for months. And I begged the Lord every day that save me from my own blindness. Save me from where I'm leading my children. And I can only really talk about myself. So, this is the birth of our Lord. Some shepherds, some magi, and this is the way with the Lord. He comes in humility, yes. But the scary thing is, he says when he returns again, he will come in power. And I pray that my heart can receive him when he comes again.